Bubba Wallace here from 2311 Racing. You know what's slower than a pace car? Waiting at the car wash. That's when I fire up Chumba Casino. It turns those slow minutes into fast fun. With new games every week, you'll never get bored. Next time you're stuck in the slow lane, speed up with Chumba. Play now at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
D-Mace, Vingen, and Donick, 102.5 The Game. Willie Donick, Derek Mason, Adam Vingen, and David Janes here with you. We hope you are having a wonderful and stress-free start to your commute on this randomly chilly day in the middle of March in Nashville, Tennessee. But again, I can't say anything about it because it's like 10 degrees where Willie is right now in Winnipeg, Manitoba, Canada. The Predators wrap up their road trip tomorrow against the Winnipeg Jets. But let's get to your phone, 615-737-1025. We are reacting to the Titans uniforms. We did not have a chance to do this on Friday. We didn't have a show. And a lot of you have a lot of thoughts. So let's get to them now. 615-737-1025. Let's start with T-Mac. T-Mac, thank you for calling. Please go ahead.
Okay. I'm going to say this. And just bear with me. I got a lot to say, but I'm going to try to make it as quick as I can. I'm with Derek Mason on this one. Because I like the uniforms, but I hate the uniforms. I like the uniforms as the Oilers. And by the way, these are not new uniforms. They wore these uniforms 2 years ago when Will Levis threw four touchdowns in his debut game. So these are not new uniforms, by the way. And I hate them as the Titans uniform because Derek Mason's right. All the memories of the Titans, the Super Bowl run, the 2018 with Vince Young and Chris Johnson, the whole Mike Vrabel, A.J. Brown, Tannehill, that 2019 run when they went to the AFC Championship game, they did that all in Navy, okay? They did that in Navy. And, in fact, when Bud Adams moved the team here in 97, I was a kid back then, he moved the team here in 97, the fans complained because it wasn't an identity that was familiar to Nashville. It just felt like they was bringing out of Houston stuff to Nashville. So in return, Bud Adams gave us Nashville natives our own team name, and he incorporated the color navy blue. I fast forward up to a few years ago when Burke Nighthill got on the website and said, "Oh, we're going to call the Oilers blue." Titans blue. Man, Bud Adams will be turning over in his grave right now because that's not what he asked the organization to do. And then I say this as well. That kind of takes me back to last year when we drafted Cam Ward, right? Warren Moon got up there on that podium and said that I'm okay with retiring my number one because they will no longer wear the Oiler uniforms again. He knew that this rebrand basically wearing all the uniforms and then slapping the Titans name on it, he knew that was coming, right? And then another, like, I think what they had, it wasn't broken. Like, keep the Titans, acknowledge the Oilers twice a year, do Oilers week, pull those uniforms out. Yes, we said we liked those uniforms, but we didn't say we wanted them permanent as the Titans. We like when you pull them out the closet every now and then.
We don't want you to do that.
Yes, it's a difference. So what I'm thinking about doing, I'm going to beat the door down. It's going to take people like me. It's going to take people like Derek Mason to keep beating the door down and writing emails up to the Titans front office and saying, "Hey, we as fans, this is not what we asked for." And I hang up and listen.
Thank you, T-Mac.
I mean, well, listen, it was very well
said.
It's
dead on.
There's nothing that I can, you know, sit here and you know, complain about what he said. I think there are more people that feel like that than they're not. I understand there's a facet of people that are going to say, "Hey, listen, I like the jerseys," or "I just don't care as long as they start winning." We already heard a few of those. But it's, to me, and I think a lot of other two-tone Titan fans, it means more than just, you know, a regular jersey. It does. Again, Much respect to the Houston Oilers, always will. Love watching that team. But we were the team that went to the Super Bowl. That's just me. Again, that is just me.
Let's go to Bob on our phone line. Bob, thank you for calling. Please go ahead.
Hey, guys. I got a good analogy for you here. Yeah, I think the uniforms are great. I love them. Of course, the whole problem being they're too reflective of Houston. And so here's my analogy. It's like your best friend comes up to you and says, I got a date Friday night with your ex-wife.
Thank you, Bob.
Fist to face to floor. No, I don't condone violence, people. I don't
Enough
condone
sandwich.
I don't condone violence at all. I mean, hey, listen, there's nothing, and I can't, and I couldn't sit back and argue with those that say they like the jersey. I'm just telling you from, you know, my opinion, my thoughts, you know, my perspective on why I feel the way I do. And, you know, if you like the jersey, like I said, I like the jerseys. I do. So it wouldn't be you don't know. I like the jerseys. But sometimes it's about more than what they're presenting. And to me, it's about more than what they're presenting.
Let's go to Dustin and Hopkins.
I also think they did zero
research. Hold on, Dustin.
I believe that they had zero research done by the fans. Hey, do you like these? Would you like to have something that looks more like an Oiler uniform? If they polled the fans and that's what the fans wanted, then I would understand it more. But I have no knowledge that they did that. If somebody can tell me otherwise, because I'm not a season ticket holder or anything like that, I would love to know if they got any fan feedback.
One texter says, it would be funny if the new stadium opened and everyone showed up wearing the old two-tone jerseys. All right, let's go to Dustin in Hopkinsville. Dustin, thank you for calling and waiting. Go ahead.
Good afternoon. I'm going to make about 3 points, and I'm going to go against the grain because that's what I do. So I love the new uniforms, and the only thing I don't like are the dang stripes. Yes, it is absolutely Oiler colors. Simple, less is more. But the stripes on the side, man, I mean, what were we doing? Was we trying to make lingerie on the side or what? Anyway, so I get what y'all are saying. We're never going to forget those Titans. But we got about, what, 3 instances that people can rename in the two-tone blue. I'm going to go another direction with this. I was voted best dressed in high school my senior year.
What year was
Me
that?
Being a Russian guy.
What was that? What
that
year was that?
2006.
Okay.
And the old Tommy Hill figure with the pop collar and the shirt underneath, you know. I was fresh,
right,
man.
Styling.
You know, I was pretty much a model. I'm just going to say it. Anyways.
I believe you.
So, two-tone blue. The word in itself is terrible. If you know anything about dressing, you know you don't wear two tones of colors together. I can't stand the Flames. I've always thought our uniforms were boring as hell. And in the last 3 or 4 years, with everything going as bad as it is, it just gave me another reason. Like, man, I don't even look good in these colors. The whole stadium looks like trash. Now we're getting a new one. Everything's coming new. Let's forget all this bad losing. Let's move forward. I love the colors. The red goes great with it. I don't care if it was the Oilers. Our owner used to own the Oilers. They said, get the hell out. He did. It's a slap in Houston's face. I'll slap, slap, slap. I'll wear it every day. Let me tell you something. Let me tell you something. They don't need to do research because when Will Levis was in that stadium and threw them 4 touchdowns, it was a sea of Oiler blue. That's all she needed to know. She's like, the fans that are putting their butts in the seats like the colors. Y'all have a good one.
Thank you, Dustin. Again. Also, don't disrespect. He talked about two-tone.
Yeah.
Don't disrespect, like, Tommy Two-Tone, right?
No.
Tommy Two-Tone's great.
Don't disrespect the two-tone blue, period. Hey, listen.
Or Tommy Two-Tone.
Yeah, or Tommy Two-Tone. Or
Willie knows what I'm talking about.
Or
yeah, they've got the one song, yeah. Great song.
And I'm not going to sit here and, you know, that's his preference. You know they did a lot of losing in those, that Oiler color, too. You know that in the last 2 years. They did a lot of losing. So hopefully this new iteration will not consist of a lot of losing. So, but hey, listen, that's his opinion. And I've said it too. Listen, she understands no matter what the two-tone blue represents, the Oiler blue, well, excuse me, the Titan blue, which is the Oiler blue, it looks better on television. It looks better walking into a stadium. It looks better on polos with the little logo, not with the flaming tag. Look better with a logo. It looks better on the hat with just the logo and not the flaming tag. The color looks better, not just two colors, but one solid color. I get that, you know. But sometimes, you know, having that contrast in coloring is good. You know, it's good to have. So, again, we won significant games in that jersey.
Throwbacks will always, always, always be in fashion. Mm-hmm. So I understand where the Tennessee Titans are coming from. It's a throwback to the Houston Oilers days. And as I said earlier, I thought that the uniforms the Tennessee Titans wore from 2018 through 2025, if I have my years right, were some of the worst uniforms in the NFL. I did not like the numbers. You know, I thought they were a little bit too busy. So this is a significant upgrade over that.
I don't think it is what it is. Yeah, I don't think they ever truly, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, Willie, because I was gone for some years. I don't think they ever truly, from the first iteration of the Tennessee Titan jersey, I don't think they ever found a way to make those two colors truly work together so it would look good on the jersey. I don't think they put enough thought. How can we make these over the years? Because it was always over the years, it was just a bland. Then you add some gray in there. Then you take it. Was just a almost like a, you know, cut and paste. And it wasn't like getting some true, like, people that know about, like, colors, fashion, and all that. How does look? They got it. Obviously, they chose to do it now. But I don't think, and maybe that's what hurt them. Because, like the caller said, I don't look. Maybe if they found a way to make those colors work better, then you wouldn't be in the situation that you're in now.
I think that's a really good point. I think, Adam, you're referring to when they switched from the white helmet to the navy helmet, which I think the navy helmet was pretty cool in and of itself. But the uniforms, because I had been saying for years back then, it was time for a little bit of a, what do they like to say?
A refresh,
days, a, glow up?
A rebrand, a glow up.
Glow up.
Yes.
I don't know what the glow is, but hey, so-and-so's got a glow up. It's kind of a funny term that people use, but I did think they needed a little freshening up of the originals, and I don't think they got it right. I'm with you, Adam. It just wasn't quite as good. I still, and Derek, I think you're right. The best look from a contrast of the two-tone blue is the original Titans uniforms, where they had the navy jersey with the hard light blue accents. When they started trying to get into the let's get the navy, the light blue jersey with the white numbers and all the different combinations, it looked a little different. Sometimes they would have all light blue, like pants and jerseys.
But don't you think over the years they started really showing the light blue as a more dominant color?
Yes, they definitely made that decision a few years into it, for better or worse. But it was still theirs, right? It was still the working with the two colors as your basic colors. That's what you identify with. And that has always been my hard, fast rule. I know some teams have not done that. We've mentioned the Padres and the Vancouver Canucks and some teams that have completely changed their color schemes. I can't figure out why they would do that. But the Titans have kind of done that here, at least halfway. They've made a major shift where it looks like a different franchise. It identifies with a different franchise. So you can do whatever you want with your color scheme as long as you stay connected to your identity. Like, there should be no mistaking who you're watching when you flip on the TV and you see the Titans playing. but it's going to look very different when they take the field this year.
One texter says the Color Rush uniforms were the only good ones from the last generation. Are those the ones where the Titans look like giant pieces of cotton candy, where they wore light blue tops and light blue pants?
I think so, yeah.
Let's go to Sam on our phone line. Sam, thank you for calling. Please go ahead.
Hey, what's up, guys? How y'all doing?
Good, thank you.
Man, just chiming in because I'm off the coffee, so you got me thinking about all the color uniforms and everything. So I think this is, I think, what people are sleeping on. The all-white jerseys, clean for the new jerseys. I will also say this. I love the white tops with the light blue pants, actually, versus talking about the light blue actual tops. I only got one jersey I've ever had in my whole life as a Titans fan, and it is extremely fake, so I can't talk too much with that. But I will be looking at the all-white jersey, especially the one for the Cam Wars. That's all I'm going to say. I appreciate y'all. Y'all have a good day.
Thanks, Sam. A lot of fashionistas on our phone and text lines driven by Wilson County, Hyundai.com. And again, this is a story now. Mm-hmm. When the season starts, we'll probably talk about it a little bit more the first time they go on the field in the preseason with these new uniforms. But, of course, as some of our texters have said, all that matters is if they win. It doesn't matter if they are naked out there. Well, you don't want them to be naked out there. But as long as they win, that's what matters. 615-737-1025. Excellent participation. We thank you for your thoughts. 615-737-1025. Coming up next, the Legarius Sneed era of the Tennessee Titans is over. How will you remember it? Spoiler, terribly. But let's talk about Legarius Sneed. The Titans released him over the weekend. 615-737-1025. Willie Donick, Derek Mason, Adam Vingan, 1025 the game. D-Mace, Vingan, and Donick, 1025 the game. Love this song. And to answer the question, no, we will not remember you, Legarius Sneed. At least not for the right reasons. The Tennessee Titans have released Legarius Sneed. They did so on Friday, a move that saves $11.4 million in cap space, according to our friend Teron Davenport. And if we were to compile a list of the worst Titans acquisitions in recent memory, hell, it may not even be just recent memory, this has to be at or near the top. The Titans traded a 2025 third-round pick and swapped seventh-round picks with Kansas City for Legarius Sneed, then signed him to a four-year, $76.4 million contract. That's an average value of $19.1 million per year. And the Tennessee Titans received a grand total of 12 games over two seasons for Sneed. So, Willie, this was the expected outcome. There was no way Legarius Sneed was going to be a member of this team next season. But, man, talk about just a sunk cost. A third-round pick set on fire. Millions and millions of dollars also set on fire. And Legarius Sneed, no longer a member of the Titans.
Yeah, that didn't go very well.
to say the least.
You know, I think the biggest, looking back on it, stuff like this is going to happen. Sometimes you make a deal and you know that there's risk involved in every deal, but you live with it, right? And sometimes you look back and say, you know what? If I could do it overall again, I would do it, even though it didn't turn out well. In this case, though, you do have to say, in retrospect, that there, A, was an increased amount of risk, right, with his knee issues that were out there, right? And they were willing to live with that, and that's fine. But to me, the biggest mistake that they made wasn't the medical stuff, because everybody is a little bit of a roll of the dice, even though his was extra, right? He was brewing, and remember the whole time when Derek was asking him about the knees, he was very sensitive right after the trade, right before he ever put a uniform on and practiced or anything. And they were sensitive at the start. They were saying, yep, he's not going to practice very much. And usually when that happens, it's not a good sign. But I think the biggest mistake was thinking that they were in a position, roster-wise, that a trade like that could really have benefits, because they were on the downswing of the window. And I just didn't think that matched up with making a trade with that type of risk, where you invest heavily in a guy that has already played a lot of games, has some questions. And what was the best case scenario? If he played great, I still don't know if it was going to be enough to make you a good team. So that was the biggest part that I think didn't make sense. And like you said, everybody's got some free agents that you throw money at and it goes bad. So you can go back and say, well, pretty bad deal when they signed Jadeveon Clowney, or who was the guy that they got from the Falcons?
Vic Beasley.
Something or other. Vic Beasley. I mean, we can all go through them. Oh, boy, that didn't go very well. But free agent is different because it's just money that you're throwing out there, and you're not giving up an asset like a third-round pick, which in football is a pretty solid asset.
This would be classified as a monumentous fail.
Epic fail, as the kids used to say.
Epic fail.
Epic fail.
That's what this would amount to if you had to sort of give it a title. Guess how many snaps he played for the Tennessee Titans.
In 2 years?
Take a guess.
Well, he played 12 games in 2 years. How many snaps did L'Jarius Sneed play? I am going to say somewhere between 500 and 600.
Willie?
Oh, boy. It's less than that, I think. 300?
Adam, you're closer.
Oh.
He played a grand total of, get this, 662 snaps in 2 years. Some people play
it didn't
that
seem like that many
in a third of the season.
Yeah,
but he's played two snaps. I mean, 662 snaps in 2 years, roughly 300 and some per year, 331 per year. This was an epic fail. And even when he was on the field, see, you can probably try to justify it if he got, like, say, for instance, Calvin Ridley.
Mm-hmm.
If they were to part ways, if they would have had part ways with Calvin Ridley.
Yeah.
We would have said, well, at least when he was on the field, he did play. Like, the dude, he had his drops for a few games, but the dude always responded. Like, he came to play, and he made some big plays for him. You can't say that about L'Jarius Sneed. You can't.
Did he make a single notable play in 2 years as a member
know.
Of the Tennessee
and listen,
Titans?
He may have. Cause if you're judging it by what they discuss in their room, I'm sure he has. But if you're talking about game-changing plays, like impact plays, there were few and far between. You could probably count on one hand in 2 years how many of those plays he made. Contrast that to before he got to the Titans. I'm sure he made a handful. He made a bunch of them. I'm sure he did. Hence why he got the money here. But this was just – sometimes you get it wrong and it's like, okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay, I got it. You effed up. Excuse me. But that's what you did.
I was there for a minute.
That's what you did with this. It was just, there was nothing about, and then add on to the legal stuff.
Yes.
I'm not saying that he did. I'm just saying add that into it. You know, sometimes if your talent outweighs your problems, they're going to keep you. Well, he had no talent to sort of look at because of it's like, I couldn't just like keeping him. It's like, no, his talent doesn't match whatever. No, I can't. No. So not only were you not playing on the field, but you found yourself in legal trouble off the field.
Yes.
That's why I said this was a colossal, epic, whatever big word you want to use.
A titanic failure?
Titanic failure.
Taylor says at least Borgonzi won that trade. Well, I suppose he did at the start.
Well, but you see what I'm saying, though? is the reward that you would have gotten even if Snead played really well.
Exactly.
We do, by the way, but we do have a texter.
It wouldn't have amounted to anything. Let's give you a comparison.
Okay.
The Julio Jones thing almost went as bad. It didn't have a whole lot, but at least you understood it more. They were going for it, right?
Mm-hmm.
They felt like Julio Jones, if they could squeeze one or two more really good years out of him, that could have been the difference of getting over the hump and winning the whole thing. That was much more understandable, even though the net result of the trade, I think it was a second-round pick, and the same issues, hey, he's not going to practice. Is Julio practicing? No, he's not practicing. Is he going to play this week? No, he's not going to play this week. Is he playing next week? Oh, I don't know. Maybe next week. I don't know. But you could get it. I understood that. This one, you knew it had a chance to go that way, but what was best-case scenario? That was my biggest problem with it.
One texter does have a nominee for a good play that L'Jarius Sneed made in 2 years.
What play was that?
He had good effort on the Cardinals game before running back dropped the ball before the goal line.
Yes, you're absolutely right.
Okay, give him that one.
Listen, I said that he could have made more plays than that, but
that is a good call, texter. I do remember that.
I go to injury is some things you just can't stop in this league, even though the Titans knew the risk. But I'm sure they figured when he's on the field, man, he's just going to be like, that's going to be our guy. And when you did get on the field, you was never their guy. Even Julio Jones made some plays. And I think it was more so Julio got doghouse. Vrabel's doghouse.
Vrabel.
Yeah, he got in Vrabel's doghouse early, so that was never going to work. So they were butting heads at the moment he got there almost, it seems like. So that may have been some other stuff going on. But it didn't seem like L'Jarius, it wasn't no butting of the heads. It was like, you're coming in here, you're our dude, and we're going to let you, if you need to rest, we're going to let you rest, not practice, all this other stuff. But then when you got into play, you just was never the guy that they signed.
Well, remember in the opening game against Denver, he was on the snap count. He didn't play very much. And then after the game, he caused a stink. Hey, ask the coaches why I didn't play so much. I remember that as well.
I mean, it became almost like you knew. Because I kept saying, even when it was happening, like, one, y'all are undermining each other. You know, one person says this, then the other person, the head coach, says this. Like, y'all undermining one another. Like, that ain't going to work. And it didn't work. Hence, they cut him.
I mean, look, perhaps I was hoodwinked by L'Jarius Sneed. The season before he arrived in Tennessee,
I was on his train,
He
too.
Was outstanding. For the Chiefs. Mm-hmm. He had the pre-existing knee condition, but he didn't miss games. So I didn't concern myself with that perhaps as much as I should have.
Mm-hmm.
But just I agree with you, Derek, and I know Willie does as well. It didn't work. The Titans lost a third round pick out of the deal. Look, the Titans have enough money. They set some on fire for L'Jarius Sneed, so be it. But a third-round pick is valuable for a team in the position the Titans are in right now.
Yes.
And they were back then. They needed draft picks. But if they were – I could see it if you're like, hey, look, this guy's a big injury risk. Hey, but like you said, you could justify it. He hadn't missed games. All right, we're going to have to babysit him a little bit of practice. You know, we got to manage this. It could be high maintenance. But if he plays well, we could win it. That was Julio Jones. But they weren't in that position. That was the problem, to me. It was worst case scenario.
One texter says, in the history of the Titans, have we ever had an aging free agent skill player do well?
yes, I think. I mean, Delaney wasn't aging, but he was a free agent acquisition, I believe. Or did they just sign him? But he had spent what? 4 years, 5 years maybe in San Fran, and he did really well.
Delaney Walker was 29 when he joined the Titans in 2013. So, that was his age 29 season.
So he
had some good seasons for the Titans.
And Rashard Matthews, I thought, came in and did pretty good. And I'm just talking about guys I remember after retirement. So, I mean, they've had a few.
Where you cut off the age. Like, exactly. You have to make an age cutoff of 30. I mean, is that, or is it 29?
Mm-hmm.
Like, when you say an aging veteran, I think you're talking at least 30. There's different levels of risk, too. Exactly. They brought in some old wide receivers, but they were just sitting there without a job. Like DeAndre Hopkins, right? He was sitting mm-hmm. there. He was a free agent. And they got him, and they ended up getting a draft pick for him. That wasn't the worst.
Yeah, I think
they got some mileage out of him.
I think Hop came in and did a good job. Was he? I guess he was aging.
He was definitely aging.
He was aging. That was his last.
But they got
1,000-yard
season out of him.
Exactly.
And then they got a draft pick and traded him. So it wasn't a sunk cost at all. It was a good usage of assets. And there were some that thought he should have signed an extension. That wouldn't have gone well.
Yeah, that definitely wouldn't have gone well.
615-737-1025. Your memories of L'Jarius Sneed. I can just see the text line piling up right now with your favorite memories of L'Jarius Sneed. 615-737-1025. We'll wrap up the show coming up next. Willie Donick, Derek Mason, Adam Vingan, 1025 The Game. D-Mace, Vingan, and Donick, 1025 The Game. Willie Donick, Derek Mason, Adam Vingan here with you. Tomorrow on the program, Trevor Maddich will join us. Predators GM Barry Trotz will join us. The Predators are back in action, wrapping up this road trip against the Winnipeg Jets. Puck drop at 7, pregame at 6 tomorrow right here on 102.5 The Game. Let's go back to our phone line, driven by Wilson County, Hyundai.com, and welcome in Jay, who wants to talk L'Jarius Sneed. Jay, thank you for calling. Go ahead.
Hey, guys.
Hey, how are you?
Pretty good. I've got a theory I want to throw out there on this guy. He played with Kansas City. He always had a chance to make the playoffs, go to possibly the Super Bowl. Played well this last year, but then I think they saw he was a little bit injured, didn't want to, continue having him. He gets a big contract here with us, gets here and realizes these guys are not very good. This team's not going to be very good. I'm not going to put myself out for him. And I think part of it was that, along with, his injury. But I think part of it may have been he just didn't really want to play for us.
Thank you for the call, Jay. I think a lot of Titans fans have felt that way at various points, that L'Jarius Sneed realized that the Tennessee Titans weren't going anywhere and he did not want to give maximum effort. He got his money. We've heard plenty of that over the past couple of years. We'll see if he ends up back in Kansas City. They have a lot of holes at cornerback now. So we'll find out.
If that is indeed the case, I wouldn't want that guy on my team. True, if that was the case.
Yeah, but don't you think that the health stuff ended up being the stuff?
Absolutely. That ended up being the thing. Keep the main thing the main thing.
If he's suddenly playing every Sunday for the Chiefs, then I would be like, okay, what's going on?
He got it.
I'll believe that when I see it.
Well, we will find out. So long, L'Jarius Sneed. We hardly knew ye. The NCAA men's basketball tournament opens Thursday. Vanderbilt draws a 5 seed in the South region. The Commodores open play against McNeese out of the Southland Conference. That is a 2:15 p.m. Central tip-off on Thursday in Oklahoma City. If Vanderbilt were to advance, the Commodores would face either the Nebraska Cornhuskers or the Troy Trojans in round 2 of the South region, which is anchored by number 1 Florida, which Vanderbilt just defeated soundly at Bridgestone Arena over the weekend. You may recall McNeese as a 12 seed last season, coached by Will Wade, who's no longer there. He's at NC State. But Will Wade and McNeese as a 12 seed knocked off Clemson 69-67. Here's a fun fact for you. The halftime score of that game, McNeese 31, Clemson 13. And Clemson
I remember that game.
Clemson outscored McNeese by 16 in the second half, but they were unable to complete the comeback. So McNeese, Willie, has experience as a 12 seed winning in this tournament.
Well, and they have experience, and this is what I have not seen exactly how many of those guys are back this year? Like, for
I
instance,
believe two off the top of my head are
two,
back from last
which
year.
Is, that's probably a lot based on today's college basketball, but it's not like they've got five guys back from that team. And Will Wade, of course, the shout-out to Nashville, FRA. Chase McCabe always likes to make a point of that. So Will Wade is no longer the coach. But this is an interesting matchup to me. And I have seen sometimes, how many times have we said matchups will be important for this particular Vanderbilt team because of the way Vanderbilt goes about it. And they won some games in the SEC tournament that gave you a lot of confidence that even in areas where they struggle, giving up offensive rebounds, etc., they were still able to beat Tennessee twice and Florida down the stretch, who are amazing, maybe the best rebounding teams in the country. McNeese is built a completely different way. McNeese is the number one team in the country at creating turnovers on defense. Number one. The average percentage possession of turnovers in the country is 16.8%. They make you turn the ball over 24.6% of the time. So that's basically Derek and Adam are coming down the court. If I'm the McNeese defense, you're turning the ball over one of every four times up the court. That's a huge percentage. And then the next level is, are you throwing the ball out of bounds to where you get to come back and at least set your defense up? Or are they making steals and you can fast break off of those steals? Well, McNeese is number one in the country at that as well, 15%. So they get a lot of points off of turnovers. Now, how is Vanderbilt built? What's one of their biggest strengths? They don't turn the ball over very often. Tyler Tanner has got tremendous ability to take care of the ball, and Duke Miles is not far behind. A.K. Okereke is basically a point guard who can play the three or four position. So he's an extra ball handler. So I think that's going to be a big thing to watch, is can Vanderbilt take care of the ball against McNeese? Because McNeese thrives on turnovers. They also, on the other side, when you are aggressive and you go for steals and things like that, what do you leave on the other side? You leave the boards open for offensive rebounds. They are 339th in the KenPom in percentage of shots that are rebounded by the offense. So they're giving up a lot of second chance points, McNeese is, when they don't get the steals. And they also foul a lot. And that's common with the team that goes for steals, right? You foul a lot. They're 325th in free throws allowed in the ratio of field goals allowed. So Vanderbilt, have we not seen them a lot shoot a lot of free throws as a team? They live at the free throw line. Duke Miles, he's got that knack of getting fouled. Okereke, those guys, and they're really good free throw shooters. So to me, these on paper, and I stress on paper, are good matchups for Vanderbilt if they can take care of the ball.
Well, this may be a long game if that's indeed is the case, if it ends up being that way, where Vandy's at the free throw line a lot. For historical reference, a 12 seed has won in the first round three of the past 4 years. So that I'm sure Vanderbilt knows that, and they know the teams that won. And like y'all said, McNeese State was one of those teams that went won the first round matchup. So they got and this is what I think alluding to what you said, Willie, as far as McNeese State causing their opponent to turn the ball over more times than not, or their ratio is a lot higher playing McNeese State than anybody else. Okereke can't get in foul trouble. Duke Miles can't get in foul trouble, because if those two guys are in foul trouble, then you leave it up to Tyler Tanner, which he can do it, but you're putting a lot of stress on him. And what have we said about Duke Miles? He always, because he has good hands, quick hands, he's always getting himself into foul trouble. Okereke, you know, he gets himself into foul trouble as well as McLaughlin. So a team that causes turnovers, they need to be facing the best ball handlers. And like you said, those three guys are the best ball handlers. Bean can bring it up, but he's not a true ball handler. So they got to make it. They got to stay in the game. You can't be having your third foul going into halftime. Neither one of those guys.
To further your point, Derek, at least one number 12 seed has won a first-round game in 34 of 40 tournaments. Wow. Multiple 12 seeds have won in the first round three of the past 4 years. And we will get more into—
Something about those four.
Yes, those 5-12s.
I don't know. Why is that? I don't know.
It's a good question. It's a good question. And we will get more into Vanderbilt's matchup against McNeese and the Commodores' outlook in the NCAA tournament throughout the week. Again, Vanderbilt tips off 2:15 p.m. Central on Thursday against McNeese in Oklahoma City. You can hear that game right here on 102.5 The Game. Quickly, before we go, another quarterback off the frontier, Willie Donick.
Yep.
Justin Fields traded from the New York Jets to the Kansas City Chiefs. Justin Fields reportedly wanted to go to Kansas City, so the Jets traded him there to back up Patrick Mahomes, who is recovering from knee surgery. So Justin Fields, who has been on the frontier many a time, Willie, off the market, on to Kansas City.
Is there anything on the return? What did the Chiefs give up to get him?
Let's see here.
I thought it was a late pick.
It's a 2027 sixth round pick. ESPN says to facilitate the trade, the Jets are paying $7 million of Fields' $10 million 2026 guaranteed salary. Kansas City will pay the remaining $3 million, much like the Jets did when they traded last week for Geno Smith.
Gosh, I'll tell you what, I love that trade for the Chiefs, because I think Justin Fields fits the mold of not, at this point in his career, not who you want starting, but I think a high-end backup. Would you agree, D-Man?
Yes, I would. And if I was him, I would have drove myself to Kansas. I wouldn't even got on a plane. I'd have drove myself.
I'm about to give him an extra mil.
I'd have drove myself to Kansas City.
I'll put a mil out of that $7 million. I'll pick one of them. I got to get to Kansas City.
Exactly.
Is Mahomes going to be ready for the regular season?
They don't know. I mean, I know they want him to be ready, but so would you have him playing in preseason?
Could theoretically Justin Fields start week one for the Chiefs?
I think it's possible.
At least
we know
preseason.
Those ACLs can be, yeah, oh yeah.
He had playing in the preseason. He's going to get a lot of reps. Snaps in the preseason, I'm sure. So, but it was a good move for Justin Fields. You know, you need to go somewhere where the pressure isn't on you to play right away or play at all. That's why, you know, you see some quarterbacks, they go places and, you know, they end up leaving the place that they went to and become a better quarterback. Why? Because the pressure isn't on them to be that guy that everybody wanted them to be. Now they get to learn, like truly sit back and learn. And that's what Fields is able to do. That's what Malik Willis was able to do. Just sit back and learn.
I think this text from Damian is a great way to end the show.
Okay.
Damian says, as a Tar Heel fan, now I'm mad at Hubert Davis for not playing Tyler Nickel. Damian, you know it warms my heart when Tar Heels fans are mad. So I thought that would be a great way to end the program. That'll do it for us today. We will be back tomorrow at 3 o'clock. Predators versus Jets to wrap up the road trip at 7 tomorrow. Barry Trotz will join us at 5 o'clock. Trevor Maddich will join us in the 4 o'clock hour. We'll continue to look ahead to the NCAA tournament. We'll talk Titans and Preds. We'll do it all tomorrow at 3 o'clock.
Be loved. Love on your people. Have a safe, blessed, and wonderful day. I love you. The team loves you. You hear that music? Don't you forget about us, because we will not forget about you. See you tomorrow, 3 p.m. on 102.5 The Game. Peace.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Another checkered flag for the books. Time to celebrate with Chumba. Jump in at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See TNCs 21+. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.